Hey guys, before we get rolling here, I just want to thank those of you who have left me a review on iTunes. This helps me keep the podcast free, so please keep them coming. Tell your friends. I also want to thank those guys that have been sending in the questions. This is what this podcast is about. It's about getting you the info that you need to help become a better hunter. Now you can actually go to my website, interviewswiththehuntingmasters.com, and click on the Ask the Pro section. And you can send me your questions there, and you can even suggest a guest. And lastly, before we jump into this episode, I want to shed a little light on one of my sponsors, Sneak Tech Sneak Boots. I've been wearing them now for several years, and they've really upped my stalking game. I'm not a very sneaky person, and I find that extra added stealthiness that they give me has really, really improved my stalk. I believe in them so much that I've decided to give away one pair each month to a lucky subscriber. So if you're a subscriber, once a month, I'm going to be announcing a winner to win a pair of Sneak Tech boots. So go ahead and go check them out at sneaktech.com, and that's SneekTech.com. Let's get to the next episode. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by the OutdoorInsiders.com and the Sneak Tech Sneak Boot. This week, we're going to change things up a little bit. We're going to move away from tactics and how-to stuff and talk a little bit about conservation and some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that you guys might be aware of or not aware of, might be involved in or might not be involved in. But these are the things that provide us opportunities and afford us the hunts that we are able to do. You know, the public land is there because of what goes on behind the scenes. And today I have Justin Nelson with BHA. He's the co-chair of the Arizona chapter, and we're going to talk a little bit about what BHA does and you know, in Arizona and countrywide. So what's going on, Justin?
Not much. How are you?
Pretty good. Finally got you on. I stood them up twice. I accidentally. Because I'm an idiot and don't know how to work my own scheduling software. But we finally got you on and going to talk a little bit about what BHA does. But a little bit before we get into that, give us a little rundown about yourself and who you are, what you do.
Yeah, so I am a father, husband, outdoorsman. I grew up hunting pretty much since it was legal. So I think at the time I've been hunting every year since I was 12. So spent a lot of my time hunting here in the state, and as well as Colorado and some time in Idaho and Utah as well. And I work here in Phoenix for a general contractor. And all my time with BHA is, you know, strictly volunteer time. So mm-hmm. something I just love doing, and it's a cause I can stand behind and love doing it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. Why don't you give us like kind of what the mission is, or the mission statement, or not necessarily the mission statement, what BHA stands for and what you guys are doing?
So BHA as a whole, like our motto is, and kind of our tagline is, we're the sportsman's voice for our wild public lands, waters, and wildlife. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we kind of take that to heart in that, you know, here with the North American model of wildlife conservation, you know, and here in, you know, North America, we have a kind of a unique opportunity and unique access that the rest of the world doesn't have, and that's public land.
Right.
Especially out here in the West. So we try to do everything within our power to make sure that that is here to stay, and that anything that threats that goes away, and goes away quickly.
Nice. So just in case you guys don't know, BHA stands for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We've been given the acronym here, but just in case you've been living under a rock and don't know what that means.
Yeah, we've been gaining popularity pretty fast, so which is great. I think our word's getting out, and it's getting out to a lot of people. We're in, I think as of now, we're in 35 states. 35 states have individual chapters.
Wow.
And four provinces in Canada also have their own chapters. So we're growing and growing quick, which is great. A lot of people are coming on board.
Sweet. So what are some of the things that you guys are doing countrywide?
So countrywide, we focus on, priority landscapes is one of our kind of like bucket type items where, you know, for instance, like in Minnesota with the Boundary Waters, there's a copper sulfide mine that's being proposed that's adjacent to the Boundary Waters right now. So that's an issue we're focused on with the Minnesota chapter and with nationally as well. We have, you know, the National Monument Review that's going on across the West. That's something we're focused keen on, or that we're really focused on. You know, our national leaders and some of our chapter leaders have met with Zinke, you know, and explained to him, you know, from a sportsman's perspective, what national monuments mean to us and how they can be, when they're done right, effective tools for wildlife conservation. So just letting them know where we stand, letting them know that the sportsmen have a voice in that review, and make sure that we don't go unnoticed. And then we have, wilderness is a big portion of what a lot of our membership likes to hunt. Mm-hmm. So anything that affects wilderness from a legislative standpoint or anything like that is something we focus on too nationwide. Whether it's law changes, boundary changes, stuff like that, we kind of chime in when it's necessary.
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about the whole monument thing? Unfortunately, I don't know enough about it because I'm always so caught up in everything that I'm doing. I'm one of these guys that doesn't even know what the hell's going on in his backyard half the time because I'm so busy, and it's sad, actually. So I've looked at it a few times. I know what I read, what they were trying to do, I was against, but just kind of bring that. I don't want to get into a giant debate about it because I don't have much to offer, but what's the BHA stand on it, and what's going on specifically with that? And, you know, what are they trying to change that's going to affect us as hunters?
So kind of in a nutshell, the whole review was brought about because the current administration kind of feels that the Antiquities Act, which was put forth by Theodore Roosevelt in 1906, they think it's an antiquated rule that the president has kind of sole authority on what he can designate as national monument without input from Congress. So it's kind of up to his discretion. So I think the goal behind this review is to have a little bit more input from Congress and from, you know, locals in the area around the national monument, which in theory is, you know, seems like a good idea. What we kind of have seen is, well, and what we're afraid of is this might be just kind of the next step as far as land transfer goes. So, we've been battling land transfer for years. You know, it comes and goes and comes and goes, whether it's, you know, they started off just trying to outright sell it, and now they're calling it a land transfer. That's not going so well, with the example of, Chavez and his HR 621 and 622 and that backlash. That's clearly not going in their favor at the moment, which is great. Now, I think, in my opinion anyway, I think what they're trying to do with this review is maybe try to approach that at it from a different angle and try to feel out the areas where they might be able to get away with something other than just a outright sale or transfer by changing national monument boundaries or maybe trying to delist them altogether. So that's what we're worried about. So we had a report that National put together a while ago that outlines kind of what sportsmen and women like to see in a national monument. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, the national monuments that exist adhere to those tenets. And so any new national monument, we hope would adhere to those tenets as well. So with the review, I know our national leaders and state leaders have met with Zinke on it and have expressed where they were coming from on that. Most recently here in New Mexico, or over in New Mexico. And so far, so good as far as the monuments he has reviewed. So hoping that trend continues and that he leaves kind of well enough alone with the way they stand.
Okay. Cool. So as the Arizona chapter, what are you guys doing here in AZ?
So here in AZ, our main focus right now is kind of membership recruitment and OHV education.
Okay.
So we're a relatively new chapter. We've been around since 2013. And we're growing more every day. I think in the past couple months, maybe 6 weeks, we've almost doubled our membership.
Oh, wow.
So with that, we're trying to, gain new members, educate them on what BHA is, what we do here in the state and nationally, first and foremost. And then a big push we've had in the past year and a half is our OHV signs. So we've started this project with help from the Arizona Sportsmen for Wildlife Conservation Group. They're the group that if you see the Conserve Wildlife Arizona license plates, they're the group that has that license plate, and the funds from the sale of that license plate goes to fund conservation projects throughout the state. Cool. So we received a grant from them to install some OHV signs that say respect your wildlife and access, which is just kind of a reminder for people when they're out riding or four-wheeling to stay on trails, respect the area, respect the access that we all have, because it only takes one guy to screw it up for the rest of us. So and then secondary to that message is with us being backcountry hunters and anglers, a lot of new people to the organization assume that we are kind of against that kind of ATV side-by-side type hunting. Mm-hmm. And we're definitely not. I hunt with a side-by-side. It just allows me to get, it's just a tool I use, it allows me to get that much further in to a trailhead without tearing up my truck. And then, the main goal is to just, use it responsibly, use common sense. Don't go off road when you don't go off the trail.
So many roads here in Arizona. Yeah. I don't know why you even need to go off trail.
It's right. Like, yeah. There. I mean,
there's a road that goes on everything. There is no backcountry.
There's been so many times I've been out walking and trying to get away from a road and convince, okay, there's nowhere near me. And looking at my map, looking at my GPS, and then, 100 yards later, I walk across the road. So I don't think there's any reason to need to drive off road with, especially here in Arizona, with as many roads as we have. So trying to stress that fact and, encourage people to get out and hoof it a little bit when they can, and realize not everybody can or is able to, but when you can't, just be smart about it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think the ATV is just an ongoing battle here. I have one also. Actually, I don't have any side by side. I have a regular quad. I don't have a side by side. And I use it, and it's just a utility quad. It's not like a race quad or anything. It's a great tool. And as long as you're not tearing up roads and just being disrespectful with it, I've seen all too many times like guys chasing game down with them. I've seen, trail blazing. I've seen guys, I'm going to send it and land into whatever, just all kinds of crazy shit.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know that. I think we as hunters, need to be unified and kind of control that because there's a whole group of just ATVers that I don't know that we're going to impact, to be honest with you. We could try as much as we want, but they're not afraid of losing much. Because you're like, okay, I'll close this road down. I'll go over here or I'll do whatever. And then it's not a realization to them. Where us, we're like, oh, you close down an area. That's one less place for us to hunt. There's like, I think it's a deeper passion. It's something that it's easier to elicit response within our niche than it is within everybody using UTVs and ATVs. I wish it wasn't so, but... And I don't want to stereotype, but there's also a lot of extreme sport guys that are kind of maybe not as responsible, maybe.
Right. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's part of the beauty that comes with public lands is, you know, it's open for everybody for multiple uses. So, and by no means do we want to restrict their access at all. Mm-hmm. But with that comes, you know, the shared responsibility of maintaining that habitat. So yeah. I think a lot of people in those kind of communities may not necessarily know what kind of impact they have, you know, even when they stay on the trail, you know, just by sound, you know, that has an impact on the wildlife. So the more we can educate them, I think the better off we'll all be and the better we can all get along.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about membership and becoming a membership and becoming a member. What does it entail and maybe some features and benefits to being a member?
Sure. So yeah, BHA is unique in that we have a wide variety of membership type packages, if you will. I think we're one of the best values going, best bang for your buck as far as conservation groups goes. You know, an individual year-long membership is only $25. And with that, you get, you know, access to our newsletters, you know, Facebook page, event invites, our quarterly Backcountry Journal magazine. And then from there, it goes up to family memberships at $35, all the way up to $1,500 and $2,500 lifetime memberships. That'll get you stuff, you know, like a brand new rod and reel from Orvis, a Kimber 1911, a Kimber Mountain Ascent rifle in any caliber you want. There's a Seek Outside teepee package with a stove with our lifetime package memberships, and even a Jackson Kayak lifetime membership to where you get a kayak out of the deal. So I think we have a lot of options, a lot of great outdoors product sponsors that, you know, make those type of memberships possible. So
cool. So if somebody, so I'm a member, I don't know what membership I have to be honest with you, but I know I'm a member. If I wanted to do something, if I wanted to get involved, if some of the listeners want to get involved in some of the stuff that you guys are doing here in AZ, or I mean, my podcast, I have fans all over the country. How does one get involved in the day-to-day stuff or get involved in a project or something like that?
Yeah. So I think the best way is, you know, make sure that you're getting our monthly newsletter here in the state. You know, if you're a member already, make sure you're getting that newsletter. Make sure it's not hitting your spam folder. That has a monthly recap of everything we've done the past month and everything that's coming up the next month. As far as, you know, we do pint nights. We try to do one every other month where we'll bounce around to different breweries throughout the valley. We're going to have one coming up in Prescott next month and try to do one in Tucson in October. And then, you know, those are great to get to know fellow members, you know, share beer. Yep. Excuse to go have a beer. Get to know fellow members, get to know what kind of issues we're looking at legislative wise and, you know, volunteer wise. Aside from that, you know, we have our Facebook group that, you know, is active with, you know, upcoming events and ways to help out volunteer wise, which is just the Arizona chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. If you Google or search that on Facebook, you'll find it. There's also a link on the national website, backcountryhunters.org, to our Facebook page. We're on Instagram at backcountryhuntersaz, that has, you know, photos from some of our members' hunts, some of our volunteer projects, upcoming events, that kind of stuff. So starting with the newsletter, finding out what's coming up, and then staying up to date with if people are on Facebook. I don't know, not everybody's on Facebook, and I don't blame them.
I wish I wasn't.
Yeah, me too. That's the best way to keep up the, you know, day to day. And then if there's something you want to get out and get more involved on a truly day to day basis, become one of our chapter leaders. Just reach out to us at Arizona@backcountryhunters.org. It's our email address. And, I'm sure we'll have something coming up that we'll need help on, especially with our signs. We have 200 signs for our OHV responsible use education program, and we just installed the first 6 up on the Kaibab Strip this past weekend.
Oh, cool.
So we have a lot that there's going to be a lot of work coming up with those. So if you get people a chance to get outside, get out to some cool areas and help out with our message. Awesome. We've got a lot. Yeah, we've been able to gotten a lot of support from Arizona Game and Fish, BLM, and the National Forest here in the state. So, looking to get that hammered out here soon.
Sweet. I'm kind of working on a little conservation deal myself right now. Been talking with Mule Deer Foundation and Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and I'm trying to bring a film project that I've been kicking around for like the last 4 years called The Season. And the reason why I decided to do it this year is because I drew 3 elk tags. Well, I got 2 elk tags myself, and my nephew drew an elk tag, which I'm going to guide him on. And I drew 3 limited mule deer tags. So I felt like, oh, this is the perfect season. I got the tags to support it. And I'd like to bring this film to life. It's the idea is to show a whole season's worth of hunting through the eyes of a hunter that is grateful for the opportunities that are afforded to him through conservation. You know, all these public land opportunities, the reason why I'm able to hunt elk and deer and do this, what I do, is because ultimately, through our conservation efforts, these opportunities are here. And also, you know, have an underlying story of what it takes to do it and how to do it and so on and so forth, and kind of really just show from the changing seasons and the different terrain and the different, you know, tactics and all that stuff, and just kind of all put it into this one movie called The Season. And hopefully I would like to bring it to fruition here. I'm busting my butt to try to get it going. I'm leaving for my first hunt here in a few days, and you know, I'm gonna start filming for it, and you know, and I still don't have the whole plan in place, unfortunately, but sure. You know, the hunts come when they come, so I have to get it going.
Yeah, take advantage.
So while I have you on here, I wanted to talk to you. I wanted to ask you if you would share with us a memorable hunt, something that had maybe like a teaching point for you, or, you know, something that may have changed the way you hunt or why you hunt, you know, that kind of a impact. You know, and it might have just you learned something, and now you hunt this way because you learned something.
Sure. I think the best example is actually the first mule deer I took was in Colorado, Western Colorado, and I was with my dad, and I think I was 15 at the time, and I wasn't new to going hunting. Mm-hmm. But I was new to the hunting process, and that was my first year in actually tagging out. Okay. And I'd been hunting since I was 12. So, you know, I'd gone 3 years, you know, without getting anything. And this first year that I actually tagged out, I feel like I had almost every scenario that could have happen in one trip, where, you know, opening morning comes and, you know, didn't see a thing. Next day comes, didn't see a thing. And then, you know, we weren't there for, you know, the full season. We were only there for a long weekend. So, Mm-hmm. You know, I was getting a little worried. You know, I thought I was just going to be another year of, you know, going out and not getting anything. And, you know, and at 15, I was like, you know, the whole point of going is to go get something. At that time, I didn't realize, you know, the whole taking in the whole experience. I was just so focused on getting something that, I couldn't take it all in at the time. But, and then, you know, come like the morning of the third or fourth morning, me and my dad are glassing a hillside. A small, Forky comes over the ridge, you know, and I'm nervously shaking, you know, fogging up my glasses, can barely see. And I finally get settled, have my crosshairs on the deer, and I just jerked the hell out of the trigger. Completely rushed the shot and had no idea if I even hit it. And then in my excitement, you know, my adrenaline's pumping, I'm freaking out. I'm like, did I get it? I had no idea. My dad's yelling, I think you got him. It runs off over the hill, and immediately I get up and start running towards it. and my dad's like trying to get me to stop. I'm like, no, you need to wait. I'm like, all right. And then, so I wait about 5 minutes, and then I'm just like, I can't wait. I was so excited. I couldn't wait any longer. I go over there. I find a little drop of blood, and a little bone fragment down where he was standing. And I'm like, all right, well, I hit it. I had no idea how well. So I go running off, chase what little blood trail there was, go up to the top of the hill and see it bedded down about 50 yards in front of me. And then it popped up and ran another, I don't know how long. And I never saw it again. So at that moment, I'm sick to my stomach. You know, I immediately regret not listening to my dad telling me to wait. You know, we don't know how well you hit it or if you even hit it. So from get go, I think I did everything you could do wrong. I did, on my first year, which is good, I guess. And the fact that I learned from it the hard way. So and luckily that's been the only deer I've wounded, and haven't been able to recover with my rifle. So, I think I learned from it. And then, you know, for the next day or two, I had the sinking feeling of, okay, well, am I tagged out or am I not tagged out? Because I shot a deer. It's most likely dead somewhere. But yet I'm not taking one home. So, you know, and the whole reason I thought I was there was to take a deer home. So I'm, you know, trying to weigh that option. You know, and I'm conflicted, like I don't know what to do. And my dad's like, well, it's your call. I mean, you have to make that decision for yourself. So I think a day or two goes by, and similar situation, me and my dad are glassing a hill, another small 3x comes up over the hill to about 150 yards. And I sat and waited for a little while, like, I don't know if I should shoot this deer. I felt like I'd already gotten my deer. I just didn't recover it. And I went back and forth what seemed like forever. And eventually I did shoot it, and it, you know, went down right away. And I was both excited and disappointed at the same time, because I didn't know if I made the right decision. So, my dad was happy. He was jumping up and down. It was my first year. We got to share in that experience, which is great. But to this day, I still don't know if I made the right decision, and I don't think I would make that decision again under the same circumstances. But I think that one trip had taught me a lot and kind of shaped the way I hunt from then on. So, I think I tend to take my time a little bit more now. I definitely don't try to rush things, and not to say that I never do or never have, but it's something that I'm always thinking about. So I think that one trip was probably the best and worst trip at the same time.
Jeez, man, that's a lot of heavy thinking for a 15-year-old.
Yeah, I mean,
I could see it in your face telling the story. You get all melancholy, man. Like, yeah. No, I've often struggled with that too. If I wounded something, whether or not I should continue hunting, and I came to grips with it. I don't know when I did, but years and years ago, and. You know, as long as I did my due diligence, I feel like, you know, if I did my due diligence to find it, mm-hmm. Then yeah. And I always chalk it up to the coyotes are going to eat it. The mountain lions are going to eat it. You know,
right.
It's just part of it's going back to nature and not that I don't revere its life, because almost every animal every animal that I ever shoot, I always have a sense of remorse, and there's always a feeling there's always a sense of sadness as well as the elation of getting something for me.
Right.
So no, I can relate totally, but geez, at 15 years old, man, that's heavy. That's heavy. Heavy thinking. I don't think I was thinking of that stuff back then. I was just like, I want to kill something, you know?
Right.
I just want to be successful.
Even like the, you know, the grip and grin photo I have with that deer, you know, there's not a, I just look like the most stoic person. Like you can't tell if I'm happy or if I'm sad because I'm just sitting there like, I don't know. I was so confused in the moment that like, it was equally both just happy and sad. So, but I more than anything though, I think I was happy to share that experience with my dad, to have him there with my first deer. And he was the one who showed me how to do everything.
Right.
When it comes to the outdoors. So, more than anything, I'm glad that was able to happen. So.
Yeah. It's crazy how those early hunts kind of like really, I mean, early years, just in general, just life in general, you know, that you're shaping yourself as a human being. But those early hunts, like I remember, and this is not the same situation, but I remember almost not wanting to hunt anymore because I was so young the first time my dad took me and I got to be part of taking a deer. He let me hold a gun with him, and it wasn't anything about the death of the animal or anything like that. It was the actual shock of the gun. Like I was almost afraid of the gun. Like, but like, I didn't like the loud noise. I still, to this day, I think that's why I bow hunt, to be honest with you, more than rifle hunt. I still don't like shooting. Like, I don't like loud noises. I don't like the impact of the gun and all that stuff. But I almost didn't want to hunt anymore because my dad didn't bow hunt, you know? And it's just, I think it's so important that when you're taking kids in the woods that, and I actually started thinking about this when you first started telling the story, like, oh, I thought it was going to be another year, 3 years in a row that I didn't get anything, da, 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 da. And like, as a kid, success is very much part of it. Like if you haven't come to realize, it's like drinking fine wine. You don't understand that. You know, you just want to get drunk as a kid. You don't understand right. All that. You enjoy the taste of a nice wine with a good steak and blah, blah, blah. You know, so hunting's the same way. You just want to kill something. You just want to have success. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a kill, but you want to have success. So, like, if you go in a field and you take a kid out and they don't see anything, that's tough.
That's rough. Yep.
It's all about making it as much fun as possible. I actually had my cousin Anthony on several months ago. We did a podcast specifically about it because he's really good at doing that with his boys. Like he told the story about taking his son on an elk hunt and it didn't end up in success, but he had an awesome time, and that was a success. And I think it's really important that when we're bringing kids in the field to make sure that they have little successes, whether that's seeing something, whether that's finding some sign on their own, just being a part of all the little successes that go about so right. that they learn to enjoy everything and it becomes about drinking a nice glass of wine and you know, enjoying it with the meal as opposed to getting drunk. Then I don't know. I haven't had those opportunities yet with my kids because they're still quite young. But my oldest daughter is starting to get to that age where she's kind of accompanied me on a few things, you know, some coyote hunts and stuff like that. And I haven't been able to call one in with her with me. And I feel I could see it in her not like losing more and more interest to going every time because she hasn't even seen one come running in yet. You know, yeah. So like, I think it's so important to kind of set up hunts that they can be successful at so that they don't lose interest in it.
Yeah. Make it about the process kind of instead of the end goal and, you know, try to have those little victories whenever possible, you know, whatever it may be, just finding some sign or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever, like you said, I think, you know, you start small and you take big chunks or you take small little chunks when you can and go at the kids' pace, yeah. you know, kind of let them dictate, you know, how much they've had so they don't get burned out. But I think I was only able to start at 12. So I think, I was able to tough it out a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. at least for a little while, not seeing anything just because I thought it would eventually come. It took 3 years, so I'm kind of surprised I stuck with it. Yeah.
There's adults that have taken 10 years and they still haven't got stuff, so don't feel bad. 3 years is pretty damn good.
Yeah, and then there was a while where there was a lot of years more than that where I didn't get anything. So,
yeah.
But at that point, I had realized, you know, it was kind of more about the trip and not necessarily the tying right. out. So, luckily, sure. because otherwise I would have gave up a long time ago.
Yeah. I tell people that all the time, especially new hunters. I'm like, if it's about, you know, holding on to a set of antlers, especially if you're trying to bow hunt.
Yeah.
Just quit now. I mean,
yep. You're just setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah. It's gotta be about everything. And I mean, and don't get me wrong. There's guys that, you know, get it done every single year and, you know, yep. they got it dialed in and that's great. But, you know, not everybody has that ability or the luck too, because we all know there's a crap ton of luck that goes into hunting.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
Being at the right place at the right time. So, but cool. Well, one more time for everybody. Can you kind of give them where to find you guys and how to get involved? And we'll call it a podcast.
Sure. Yeah. So our national site, you can see the kind of the stuff we focus on countrywide is backcountryhunters.org. And there you can find links to all the different chapter Facebook pages, Instagrams, our email address, which is just Arizona@backcountryhunters.org. If you want to get involved in more of a day-to-day process, get to know kind of what happens behind the scenes, how the events are organized, and if you want to volunteer for any stuff like that, that'd be the best way to reach out. And other than that, just, you know, keep an eye out on Facebook and the newsletter for Pint Nights. You know, it seems like every Pint Night we have a couple new people coming out that are new to BHA, which is great. Cool. They're excited that, you know, they catch you know, Meat Eater and you know, Randy Newberg talking about it on their podcasts and other podcasts and their TV shows. And it's growing fast. And I think we're letting ourselves know, you know, legislative wise, that, you know, we're not going to stand for, you know, any threats to our public access. So, and that comes from, you know, people signing up, people taking an active role in their local chapters. And it makes a huge difference. And we're starting to see the fruits of our labor, which is great.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on this evening. And thanks for putting up with me with all my mishaps on the first couple
of scheduling. No worries. Thanks for giving us a platform to talk about BHA. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I look forward to working with you guys here in the future, and you know, I'll continue to support BHA for sure.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
You too.